Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
On DAB, online, on the app, and on your smart speaker. This is My Sporting Life on Talk Sport.
I'm Paul Coit, and in this edition of My Sporting Life, one of world football's greatest ever strikers. The son of a master baker, born in Göppingen in the south of then West Germany on the 30th of July 1964. He rose through the ranks of the Bundesliga with Stuttgart, where he became the league's top goal scorer and German Player of the Year. In 1989, he became one of Italy's most popular players, signing for Inter Milan, winning the UEFA Cup in 1991, and from there, the glamour of Monte Carlo and 2 years at Monaco, and then signing for Tottenham Hotspur. In one season there, winning Footballer of the Year in 1995, scored 30 goals, invented the diving goal celebration, and even had a Madden Tussauds waxwork commissioned. It was short-lived, though, as Bayern Munich came calling, and in his two seasons there, top goal scorer twice, and Bundesliga winner in 1997. A brief move to Italy followed before ending his club career back at Spurs and helping the club avoid relegation in 1998. He played 108 games for Germany, winning the World Cup in 1990, and managed his country from 2004 to 2006. Joining me for My Sporting Life, from his home in California, the great Jürgen Klinsmann. How are you, Jürgen?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm so well. Listen, it's great to have you. If we can go way back to when you were a kid, you one of four sons. So was it a footballing family? Was it a sporting family you came from?
Yeah, I would say a sporting family. My father was a gymnast and a bicycle person and very athletic. He was a bit short, but he was strong, very strong guy. You know, he did always pull-ups on the door frame. For fun. So I have three brothers. One played football as well, and one was a track and field person, and the other did the martial arts. So there was always sports in our family.
So when did you realize how good you were? Because I know you played from when you were a young age, and I know the story. Did you score like 16 goals in one game when you were a kid?
Yeah, and the under 10 in my local, it was a small town of about 4,000 people where I grew up in. And it was one game coming up and it ended 20-0. And I scored 16 goals in 40 minutes. And I think in that, because I kept track, when I started at the age of eight, my dad gave me, I called it the record book.
Yeah.
He wrote a nice phrase into it. And he said, keep track of all your games and maybe something special will happen. And so from the very beginning on through our entire youth career, I tracked every game. I put down the results, the team that we played against, and the goals that I scored. So it ended up in that season where I scored 16 goals. I had 106 goals in one season.
Not bad, not bad. I've got to say, though, and forgive me if I don't think I'm wrong, but I would guess it was a very stable family that you grew up in, because even as I know you now, you know, you're very straight down the line, you're very kind, you're very friendly, and it sounds like it came from good upbringing, because of course the story is very well known about your father that had said, you know, I want you to train as a baker like me so there's something to fall back on. And you still did that, even though you were playing football at a high level, right?
Yeah, I think it goes all down to the parents and to the family environment. And we grew up in a very small town bakery. And when I got the opportunity to sign a professional contract at the age of 16, my father basically had to sign that contract, but I had to leave school then for that. And after 10th grade, and he said, well, you need something to to go back on if things don't turn out the right way, you get injured or something, you know, it just doesn't work. And so I got a degree as a baker, went through that for 2.5 years. So I got up at 3 a.m. and then at 8 a.m, he let me go to training and train with a second division team in Stuttgart. And that's where I learned my trade. And I think it always falls back on your environment and the people that are around you, and especially the family, obviously. And so I appreciate everything my parents did for me.
So at what point did he say, you know what, Jürgen, I think you've got a future in this business? Did you have to lift the World Cup before he said, okay, the bakery's not going to be your thing?
Yeah, pretty much, because it's still when I signed my first bigger contract, I moved from that small club Stuttgarter Kickers second division to the big one VfB Stuttgart. Obviously they just won the German title in that year. He still came back and asked me if I need money for gas.
Oh, that's great. That's so sweet.
He couldn't comprehend that. And I said, no, don't, Dad. They give me a lot of money to play in that team, so I don't need money anymore for gas. I'm all good. But he kind of came back to me because he couldn't comprehend the amount of money, basically, that was for him unheard of, and he didn't really believe it. But then later on, obviously, when I kept moving away and went to Italy then and winning the World Cup, then he understood, okay, he doesn't need my financial support anymore.
I got to ask you, though, you can still cook the pretzels, though, right? The magic's still there with the pretzels, still your speciality?
Absolutely. Yeah, no problem at all.
Okay. So it's 1982 then, and the family moves 30 miles to Stuttgart for your dad's new bakery, and you signed your first professional contract with the second division side, Stuttgarter Kickers. Now, is this where you met Horst Ullmann? Horst Ullmann, one of Germany's finest ever sprint coaches, who I know was a huge influence on your career because speed was so important in your game.
Yeah, that's correct, Paul. My older brother, as I mentioned before, was a track and fielder, a decathlete, actually. And when I played second division for the smaller Stuttgart team, the Stuttgarter Kickers, he watched it and he said, well, you're losing far too much energy. Your running style is not good enough, and that's why you're getting tired towards the end.
Yeah.
You need to train that specifically. And he, as a track and fielder, had his coach, and his coach, his name, Horst Ullmann, was the top coach of the German sprinters at that time. And so he said, well, if you do two extra sessions a week with me specifically just for speed training, I get you much faster. And we measured it before. I was a 12.0 over 100 meters in the beginning. And literally a year later, we measured and I was down to 11.0. So I improved 1 second over the 100 meters just by additional training. And that became a little bit my trademark, because I could run people out of gas, not only kind of distance, but also then sprinting wise. And it obviously helped me to score a lot more goals than I was maybe otherwise.
Sure. Yeah. Without doubt. You're moving up, and as you move along, is there a point where you think, yeah, this is really falling into place? And also you felt that each level you moved up to, you felt not only comfortable, but thought, well, you know what, I'm maybe better than the people that I'm playing with.
Yeah, I mean, I just took it one step at a time, really kind of realizing second division and then first division. And then suddenly you get in the focus for the national team. And in the early 90s, obviously the league that you wanted to be, or every top class player was around the world, was Italy. You know, with Diego, Amanda, Maradona, Careca, Lemar, Gullit, Van Basten, all these guys, Mateos, they started to kind of play late 80s then in Italy. And I think I just realized that then when I got the offer on the table from Inter Milan, they came up to my little town, Geislingen, outside of Stuttgart, you know, the general manager, and then put down a piece of paper with an offer that, for me, was kind of out of the world. And that's when I really kind of understood, okay, you know, this is going really to the top level, and I was very proud of it. But also, I was realistic. I knew it's going to be difficult, and you have to learn how to adjust to different places very quickly, not only on the field, you know, with your game and with the teammates, but also off the field. And that experience, probably going from Stuttgart to Milan, for me was the most important step in my life, because I, me as a German, I had to learn to live a different culture and accept that culture and and learn that language. And especially I had to learn the people the way they are. And that helped me tremendously for my entire life, because then I became like a little bit of a globetrotter and moved all the way, you know, to different places. But culturally, the biggest lesson the Italians gave me was, take us the way we are and you will have a good time. A
few games I want to mention from Italia 90. One was the Netherlands. Now, they'd beaten you, of course, in the Euros a couple of years before. There was that very famous or infamous moment with Frank Rijkaard and Rudy Völler. Rudy gets sent off because Frank Rijkaard had spat at him. And at this point, you know, you're the lone striker. And this is still said to this day, one of the great striker performances was what you did on that day. Now, what do you remember about what happened?
Well, obviously, you know, Rudy Völler got sent off absolutely for the wrong reasons, because he hasn't done anything there. Sure. But the referee kind of picked on both of them, and suddenly I was there by myself, and I think it damaged Holland more, because as Rijkaard, as an amazing defender, those days he left a hole in that defensive shape from the Dutch team, and I found a lot of space, and I love running. And so I took all that space in the world, and that's why I probably had one of my best games in my career.
Is it true that you passed out afterwards because you were so exhausted, because you just ran and ran and ran?
No, I didn't pass out.
I've heard that story. No, of course, no. I didn't. No,
maybe
of
after
I didn't.
maybe after the third beer later.
And then the England semi-final. Does it mean as much? Still, I mean, we talk about, you know, England have played in Euro finals now, but still, for those that remember, the semi-final against you in Italia 90, everybody remembers everything about it. Is it the same for you, or is it not?
No, it meant a lot to us as well, and it always means a lot to all Germans when we play England and we have that rivalry. And also when we have this past in kind of in common that we talk about it. And I always repeated myself over the decades, you know, that we were on the luckier end with the penalty shootout. It could have gone both ways. You know, England hit the post twice. We hit the post. I had a huge chance right before the end of the game. Yeah. In regular time, a header that I should have buried, you know, blindly. I was so mad at myself that I didn't score that opportunity. But it's a special rivalry. And I think over the decades, people really appreciate it, because they are always, when we play England, they know that's going to be, it's going to be a really tight outcome. It's going to be drama involved. And people will discuss it up and down, you know, the lineups and everybody, obviously we have 80 million people in Germany. It's 80 million head coaches, you know, managers.
Of course there is. So same here. And then we get to the final, and it's Argentina who beat host Italy in the semi-final, which also went to penalties, and facing the world's greatest footballer, Diego Maradona, and also where those accusations of diving began as well. It's all coming up next on My Sporting Life with Jürgen Klinsmann.
My Sporting Life. Paul Coit in conversation with Jürgen Klinsmann on Talk Sport.
So, Jürgen's made his name as Germany's best striker with Stuttgart, and now the San Siro with Inter Milan, and now finds himself on the 8th of July 1990 in the World Cup final against Argentina. And a man I guess you knew very well, Jürgen, Diego Maradona.
Yeah, I got to know him a little bit better over the years. You know, we had many games, Inter Milan against Napoli. I played a UEFA Cup final with Stuttgart against Napoli. We lost that one against him. I mean, he was just an unbelievable player. I mean, there's obviously the story about Diego on the field, and there's the off the field stories, you know, that are very sad in a certain way. But he's been always on the field. And when I met him off the field, a super friendly personality, a big heart, you know, a little bit crazy, no doubt about it. And that's why he went kind of the wrong tracks once in a while. But a fantastic personality, but he was a player on his own level. And obviously his technique, it was insane. I remember my UEFA Cup final with Stuttgart against him. The warm-up he did, you know, to the music Life is Life became legendary on YouTube. I don't know how many million hits on YouTube. And we players were standing on the other side. We tried to warm up, but actually we were actually just watching Maradona juggling the ball. with open shoelaces and in the rhythm of life is life, you know.
Yeah,
and pretty much there you can already say that we lost the game already during the warm-up.
Well, it certainly didn't happen in the final, even though Maradona pretty much took Argentina there single-handedly. It wasn't a classic, so but there is one thing I want to mention, and this is when it's 0-0, 65th minute of the game. A moment that almost defines your career for the worse, I guess, Jürgen. You go running in towards goal, and as you do, defender Pedro Monzon takes you out with a really high tackle.
Das Monzon für dieses Foul vom Platz flog.
You go flying even higher than that, and he gets sent off. Now, I know you had a 15-centimetre gash left in your shin, but I guess that's when the Jürgen Klinsmann diving accusations began, right?
Yeah, I mean, when I watched it, I mean, I got that cut about 15 centimeters. But when I watched it, I also realized, you know, that I kind of, I don't know, there was just a body reaction the way I fell then. And it looked a little bit theoretic, like a theater.
It was very high. It was high.
Yeah. And I thought that looked a bit awkward. I agree to that. But then, I mean, when the diver story came up then on my reception, basically in England, coming from AS Monaco to Spurs, I was surprised I was caught on the wrong foot. But I thought, okay, how did that? So people explained it to me. It had to do with the 90 World Cup.
Sure.
So they said, you know, just I had a friend actually living in on the Côte d'Azur there close to Monaco. And he just simply said, you got to take the English humor, that spirit, and you got to put something on top of it, you know. That's how the English humor is, you know. They don't expect you don't be offended. Then you lost it. Then you lost, you know. So you got to come out with a joke or something. That's why I came up there with presenting myself with the diving school in London at my press conference. And I had actually snorkeling goggles in my backpack.
But I didn't
put them on the table then. But it helped me. And then it came the brilliant idea by Teddy Sheringham, obviously, in my first game in the Premier League against Sheffield Wednesday, when he said before the game, hey, you know, if you really score one goal in your opening game here, then we are going to do a dive.
Well, look, we'll get onto that. We'll get onto that in just a second. But winning the World Cup, is it a feeling of utter jubilation? Is it the greatest feeling? And then you think, where do I go from here? Because I hear that. I mean, you won Olympic medal, of course, playing for Germany over in Seoul. But winning that World Cup is the ultimate for any footballer. So are you thinking, I don't know where I go from here? Or is there relief? Is there a jubilation? What does it feel like in the World Cup?
I think you just simply don't understand what happened in that moment. I mean, yes, you party. Yes, you are happy. And it's something very special. You know that, but you have no understanding what you actually achieved because you are too young for that. And it's overwhelming, as simply as that. So you will only understand the dynamic or the real appreciation of winning a World Cup when your career is over.
And answer this for me, as every English football fan, whenever we play Germany, and we'd always felt that for all these years, there's Germany, you'd always have something more. You know, we could never quite get over the line. Is it something in the German psyche? Is it the quality of the players? But even in penalty shootouts and over the years, that we would just never quite beat you. And it would just frustrate the hell over English supporters. What is it?
You just did it in the Euros.
Well, I'm looking back to when you were playing, looking back a little bit.
No, I mean, there is a natural kind of a natural healthy confidence level in our kind of DNA. And it comes from the past. It's built by the past. Mm. And I think, you know, if you look at our history, after World War II, which was devastating for everyone around the world, the World Cup in 1954 that the German team won there was the first time, and my father explained that many times to me, where the Germans kind of had a feeling that we can stand tall again.
Yeah.
We can kind of show our face again after the devastation of World War II. And then came the 74 in a moment where there was a worldwide crisis, oil crisis, then the 72 Olympics with the incidents there, the horrible ones. And and it came just together in the 74 World Cup where the Germans had an incredible, incredible team of quality with Franz Beckenbauer leading that team and Gerd Müller scoring all the goals and so forth. And our team in 1990 basically became the face of the reunification.
Well, after the World Cup, then, you stay in Italy with Inter, but the manager Giovanni Trapattoni leaves, the man that signed you. That then affects the side, came eighth in Serie A in 1992. You're not scoring as many goals under new manager Corrado Arrico. So I'm guessing the relationship between the two of you wasn't so good.
No, actually not. It worked out on a personal level really well.
Yeah.
I adored him. But in that year, AC Milan stole my striking partner, Aldo Serena, was also an Italian international player.
Yeah.
Got him basically on board, and I was left alone up front. And then on top of that, our key player at those days, Lothar Matthäus, got badly injured. He tore his Achilles tendon. Mm. And so I had no support up front anymore. I got more and more frustrated. I didn't score the goals I should have scored. And so it turned into a negative year in a certain way.
So time to leave then. Was it your decision? You just thought, you know, I want to move somewhere else. And how do you decide where you're going to go at this point?
It was my decision. I went to the president, the owner of Inter Milan, and asked him politely if it's okay if I move on. And I promised him I'm not going to go to another Italian team.
Yep.
This is the team in Italy that I wanted to play for. And he said, no problem. We'll check it out. And so he came up, and suddenly AS Monaco knocked at the door. Before it was Paris, then AS Monaco, and he said, let's go down there, where Arsene Wenger was the manager those days.
Yeah.
And so we took actually the helicopter from Milan to Monaco and went there, and we had negotiations. And I mean, it was all very easy. And I had the offer to play up front with George Weah.
Wow.
In those days, one of the top strikers mm-hmm. there. And Arsene said, yeah, I want you two playing up front. And after 1 year playing all by myself, I said, this is it. This is winning the lottery. You know, George Weah and myself up front. So I signed the contract. I go the next day to Monaco, and George Weah gets sold to Paris Saint-Germain.
That's great, isn't it? How long? About 6 hours?
Yeah, exactly. And I went right away to Arsene. I said, Arsene, you promised me I can play up front with George Weah. And I said, Jürgen, if I would have told you that we sell him right away, then you would have never signed the contract. And I said, yeah, that's right. I wouldn't have signed the contract. But then when the deal was signed, and I spent 2 years with Arsene Wenger in Monaco.
I can imagine every manager saying to you, well, you're playing up front, but we saw you play against the Netherlands up front, and it worked absolutely fine. So you can surely do it again. You'd probably never walk again if you did it that way. Did you enjoy your time in Monaco, living in Monte Carlo?
Yeah, I did. Really, I did. I think French football, especially on a technical side, is very, very good football. Good teams, very competitive, also very physical here and there. I got some real kind of experiences there with some defenders. I had a fantastic time. I had with Arsene Wenger, an amazing, not only manager, but almost like a philosopher of life. A person that looks far beyond the football pitch. I learned a lot from him in these 2 years. I wanted to move on. I mean, it's just the fact was that the games at home maybe were seen by 5,000-6,000 people. And only the games are sold out against Paris Saint-Germain and against Olympique Marseille. Those are the two main ones. And obviously, when you play Champions League, then you have sellout crowds as well. But after 2 years, I felt that there's more to it. You know, I need to move on. I get then a little bit nervous. And then I went to Arsene and I said, Arsene, it's time for me to go. We had another year contract. And he says, well, if you get me a club that spends a little bit of money for you, then I let you go. I was already 30 years by then.
Sure. I'm Paul Coit, and my sporting life continues with Jürgen Klinsmann and why he swapped the glamour and Ferraris of Monte Carlo for London N17. And a beat-up VW Beetle. Stay with us. Life is
life. My Sporting Life with Jürgen Klinsmann on Talk Sport.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
My Sporting Life. Paul Coits in conversation with Jurgen Klinsmann on Talk Sports.
It's 1994, and Jurgen's played for Stuttgart in Germany, Inter Milan in Italy, and now with Monaco. And it seems he's got itchy feet again, and now London's beckoning. So, Jurgen, it's almost like you're a footballing nomad. You spend a fairly short time at each club. Was there something within you that felt like you wanted to stay longer somewhere that you could truly call your footballing home? Or did you never really feel that way?
No, for me, it was not a question of feeling at home. For me, it was more the question of what can I learn? What is next? What is my next experience?
Yeah.
And when I had the feeling that, okay, I kind of get it. I know the place. I know the language. I know the people. It's kind of everything settles in a certain way. Then I got bored. It was just me.
Right.
Then I got bored. I said, there needs to be more than that, you know. And then I went and asked the chairman, whoever it was, at whatever time it was, can I move on?
Okay. Well, the next one then, which we'd always say was your home, Tottenham Hotspur. So Tottenham Hotspur are not in a great way. Out of the FA Cup, they docked 12 points for financial irregularities. And as a Spurs fan, Jurgen, I've got to tell you, at that time, we needed a hero. And then you come on this white horse and the suit of armour. How on earth did this happen?
It happened that after the World Cup 94 in the United States, I got back then to Monaco. Obviously, I still had a year to stay and had my relationship with Arsène. And I thought, well, let's see what comes up. I scored 5 goals in the World Cup. You know, if I get 2 more games, I would have maybe become top scorer of the World Cup, but unfortunately be left in the quarterfinals with Germany there.
Yeah.
And so then I had an offer from an Italian club, but Italy I did already. I had an offer actually from a Spanish club. And then suddenly I got a phone call and it's Alan Sugar on the phone.
Did you know who he was?
Yeah, he explained himself right away. I'm the chairman of Spurs. And I said, nice to meet you. And I'm actually here in Monte Carlo on my yacht. You know, is there any chance we can meet up for a coffee? And I said, oh, that's 200 yards away from me because I live in an apartment building. Everything is very small. It's a small little village. And so we had a cappuccino and over 2 hours we discussed things and the deal was done. I called Arsène. I went over to the club. He came with me and they shook hands. And things were very easy. And suddenly I was a Spurs player.
So you come into Spurs. Everybody is taken everybody by surprise. And the press conference. Of course, like we mentioned earlier, there's the talk of the diving and people think... There was a guy called Anthony Andrew that wrote for The Guardian, you know, why I hate Jurgen Klinsmann coming over. And then you just came over and charmed and disarmed everybody. So that press conference was the thing that started it. So were you thinking, I got to bring this up. This is something that I'm aware of and I've got to make a joke about it.
Yeah, I did because a friend of mine, as I mentioned... in close to Monte Carlo, he gave me that advice that you always have to top, you know, if you get provoked, if somebody, you know, kind of attacks you, then you got to learn to deal with that. Sure. Never be offended. But now in our German culture, if I wouldn't have had the experience already with Italy and with France, prior to that, I probably would have been offended and would have responded the wrong way, mm-hmm. you know. And but thankfully, I didn't. You know, he gave me that advice, and I came up with that joke, and I won people over.
I just wanted to ask if there's any diving school in London.
But at the end of the day, you can only win people over in the world of football with your game.
Of course.
You know, and I knew, okay, you can make a joke at the press conference and get it started. But at the end of the day, what the people expect, especially the Spurs fans expect from me, are goals. You know, so, but in that kind of area, I felt confident because obviously I had the previous experiences at top clubs and I was so eager to prove my point in the Premier League, which I always adored and watched on TV. And then being in London was for me the real adventure, you know, discovering London, discovering, you know, the area of Tottenham, you know, Teddy Sheringham, I can remember they took me out on High Road. They took me out for fish and chips and they introduced me to their lifestyle.
It wasn't Monte Carlo, was it, Jürgen, the High Road?
No. Thankfully so. I enjoyed Monte Carlo. It's a beautiful spot. But for me, this was real life,
sure.
You know, real life. And I learned basically the way the Spurs fans think, what their philosophy is, what they want to see from their team. And I felt after a couple of weeks like, this is your place. Mm-hmm. This is where you belong, mm-hmm. because this is exactly how I play my game and actually also how I live my life. You know, I'm not driven by materialism or things and whatever. You know, I'm driven by football, you know, and that's how the Spurs fans are driven by football. They're very knowledgeable. They know when to get loud. They know when to cheer the team on. They know when there's a bad moment, we are struggling, and suddenly they become louder and louder. And that kind of atmosphere at White Hart Lane, I really literally sucked it all up. And I said, this is it. This is how I want to play my game.
So the diving celebration, the first game away, Sheffield Wednesday, of course, a great goal. How was that planned? Was it you? Was it Teddy? Was it the rest of the team? Was it something that just happened naturally? Tell me about it, Jürgen, because people still do it today.
No, it's all Teddy's fault.
Anderson looks to pick out Klinsmann! There is the goal, the debut goal for Jürgen Klinsmann. And the celebration to match. Welcome to the Premiership, Jürgen Klinsmann.
So we drive up to the stadium and there are thousands of Sheffield Wednesday fans in front of the stand, outside basically at the gates. And we're driving through with the bus and they hold up signs with 5.8, 5.9, 5.7.
Right.
Basically saying, you know, that the diver comes, you know, we give him a welcome here. And the guys, the lads in the bus, on the bus, they freaked out. They were laughing. I mean, we were just laughing. And then Teddy had that idea. Jürgen, you know what? You score a goal here today.
Yeah.
We're gonna do that dive. And then after that happened, then for the second game we played at home against Everton.
Yeah.
It happened that then again Teddy came back to me and says, "Oh my little son, you know, Charlie, who obviously had his own career then later on and is all adult." But at that time he was a cute little kid. And he said, "Dad, you have to tell Jürgen, if he scores again, he has to dive again, because all the kids in the parks now, wherever we play, we score, we dive. You know, that's the rule." And that was hilarious. And then they scored a bicycle kick goal against Everton. It topped it all up.
But the funny thing is when I mentioned on Twitter that I was going to speak to you, Jürgen, the amount of people that sent me messages, and most of them were saying, you know, tell him that my mum is still angry because my school uniform got so covered in mud because we were all doing it at school all the time. So you're responsible for a lot of school uniforms, Mr. Klinsmann.
Apologise.
So how was it? That famous attacking five, the famous five, which should have struck fear into any defence, which was you and Teddy Sheringham, Nicky Barmby, Darren Anderton, and the two Romanians, Ilie Dimitrescu and Gica Popescu. Unfortunately, it didn't work out in the end as far as the way the football and way Ozzy Ardiles set things up. There was that famous five, you scored 11 in 10 and everything looked like it was going to be terrific. But unfortunately, the team were just shipping too many goals at the time, weren't they?
Yeah, we didn't get consistent enough in our defending. And the first thing that Jerry Francis obviously did, he tried to kind of play the same back line week in, week out and give us a bit more continuity. I felt really bad for Aussie because it's a fantastic personality, very, very good manager.
Yeah.
But just that kind of, the balance was not there in that moment, in those months. So we conceded just too many goals. We scored many, but we conceded too many. But I will never forget those months working with Ossie, and I really adore him. And Jerry then came in, he stabilized the things, you know, defensively, and then we step by step climbed up in the table of the league. And it's been a fascinating year because Alan Sugar, he got us back into the FA Cup. We had a tremendous FA Cup run all the way till the semifinals. Yep. And he could have got it down to 6 points deduction instead of 12. So I think we finished sixth or seventh, if I'm not mistaken. It was an amazing, amazing experience.
Well, you won the Footballer of the Year that year. You went from villain to hero. I mean, you don't have to say this because I'll tell you it's true. Everybody loved you. Everybody loved watching Jurgen Klinsmann play. I don't think anybody had had such an effect, certainly playing for Tottenham Hotspur in such a short space of time. And you even got a waxwork as well, didn't you, Jurgen?
At Madame Tussauds?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's quite special for a German.
it just shows how important that year was. And also the famous, and you mentioned about materialistic things, and the other thing that a lot of people mention was the old VW Beetle. You know, you'd get stars that turn up in all these fast cars, and you would turn up. Now, was it trying to make a point? Or was it just something that you just like driving this car? And, you know, you didn't need any other big flash car.
No, I had big cars as well.
You know, ruin it for me.
But not in London at that time. So when I played for Inter, I had a Porsche as well.
Yeah.
But for me, a car was always kind of going from A to B.
So, Jurgen, the thing is, the question we all want to know is everything was great. Okay, you probably didn't win anything, but I imagine it's probably some of the most fun football of your career and you're enjoying your life in London. So why did you decide to go after a year?
That's, very simple, because Franz Beckenbauer called.
When the Kaiser calls,
you cannot say no. It's done in 10 seconds. So he called, sitting in my little Muse house in Hampstead, and it's Franz Beckenbauer, Bayern Munich. We want you here. Mm. So it's my wife at that moment was sitting next to me, and she just saw my face, and she knew that, okay, we gotta go. So that was one point, is that Beckenbauer, because the other point is you're running out of gas with winning titles. I knew at that point that the Spurs team didn't have the quality yet, you know, to go for titles.
Sure.
We were a good team, I think, between spot, I would say, 5 to 8. That would have been kind of reality. But I'm not going to win any titles here, so except maybe the FA Cup. And so I knew if you want to win a couple of trophies more and you're running out of time, you're 31 years old now, you got to go. And that's what I told Alan Sugar then. I said, I'm sorry, I got to go. I mean, I would like to have a couple of more trophies somewhere in my closet.
Was it only Bayern Munich and Franz Beckenbauer that would have turned your head? Would it have been anywhere else?
No, it was that specific situation, because when Franz Beckenbauer calls, or Bayern Munich in general calls a German player and says, you are on top of the list, absolutely on top of the list, mm-hmm. you're number one target for us for the next season, it's pretty much impossible to say no. And that's how I felt in that moment. And it turned out the way I expected it. You know, you go there, you win the German title, you win the UEFA Cup. Now, from a lifestyle point of view, I had to realize going back to Germany that I was already kind of, throughout the years, became a different person. I became a far more a multicultural person. Sure. I'm not German anymore. And I had my struggles. I had my struggles with a lot that I saw then in Germany and in Bavaria and with the club and how they do things. And so it was a very successful time, but it was not the happiest time.
Jurgen Klinsmann. And more from his story at Bayern Munich, heading back to Spurs and then becoming a manager in the final part of My Sporting Life. Coming up next.
My Sporting Life. Paul Coits in conversation with Jurgen Klinsmann on Talk Sport.
Move on, just keep moving.
As well as being one of the world's greatest strikers, Jürgen's like a footballing nomad, spending no more than a couple of years at each club in each country. Winning medals, breaking records, but learning languages and taking in new cultures wherever he goes. From Stuttgart to Milan, from Monte Carlo to London, but Franz Beckenbauer called and it was time to head home. But being a staunch Stuttgart fan, Jürgen, didn't your dad say to you, you can go anywhere, but not by Munich?
Yeah. I had to tell him that. I said, Dad, I have now this offer from Kaiser Franz and Bayern Munich. And he says, you know, if that's what you're going to do, you got to do it. Yeah.
Who was it harder to ask? Was it harder to tell Alan Sugar you were leaving or your dad?
No, it was harder, Alan Sugar. I mean, okay. Because I felt at home. I felt part of the Spurs family, and I felt very privileged to represent that team. And I knew that, you know, it's going to be a big blow for a lot of people. But I said, you know, you're 31, you have a couple of years to go.
Yeah.
If you want to win something, you know, going forward, then you got to go. And it turned out the right decision, definitely from a football perspective. But still, I mean, I still came back then. Logical thinking, you know, you want to win a couple of titles, you got to listen to the Kaiser and win some titles.
Hugely successful, went well there. But from what you're saying, did it suit you, Jürgen?
No, it did not suit me 100% for sure. I mean, in certain ways, yes, you know, because I'm driven by the ambition of winning and of scoring goals as a player. On a personal level, there were things that where I didn't match with my experience that I made before abroad and the way I grew up. So here and there, culturally, I clashed with them. I had arguments. I lost a lot of energy on kind of things that are really not important at all.
Sure.
And so I took my decision after 2 years, then basically winning the German title, to move on again.
Yeah, so you did, and it's 1997. Then the next move, Jürgen, is back to Italy, isn't it, with Argentinian World Cup winning manager Cesar Menotti, who then soon left to be replaced by Yugoslav Vujadin Boskov. I know you weren't there much longer afterwards, so how was that relationship?
It turned out to be not a good match in a few days. I went to the president, Mantovani, at those days, and told him, listen, we had a verbal agreement. If things don't turn out for whatever reason, we can always talk. And he says, yep, you're absolutely right. He understood it. I said, I'm a half a year away from the World Cup in France, which is for me a big deal as captain. And he says, you know, if you find a team, you know, let me know. And so we got in touch with Spurs, and Christian Gross, the Swiss manager those days, was there, and Spurs was second of the bottom. So I thought, you know, they could kind of maybe, not that they need my help, but maybe they appreciate my help.
Jürgen, they needed your help, trust me.
Yeah, but I needed help too.
Sure.
Because I came back from an injury, and yeah, I needed to get back in the flow, and things didn't turn out the way I hoped so. Even if Genoa as a place has been fantastic, it's really, really nice place in Italy. But so we did that overnight. So just right after Christmas there in 97, we made that move back home to White Hart Lane. And and I was then honored to help out, and the club helped me out. And I could go. So we moved away from the relegation zone step by step. And by the end of the season, I could prepare for the World Cup in a quiet way and play my last World Cup then in France.
Was it planned then that you were going to retire, that this was going to be the end of club football, and then after the World Cup, that would be you finished? How long did you know that?
No, I think those kind of matured in that year, so step by step, because we had at that time our son Jonathan was born in 97 in, yeah, Munich still, and I just wanted to have time for him, and we realized if the footballer's life is not ideal, you know, to have kids and them growing up, they need, you know, the parents around, so it more and more matured in my mind that okay, it might be 98 World Cup in France is the final point.
What a way to go at Spurs, though. That Wimbledon 6-2 that still people talk about, and you scoring four goals right towards the end of the season, which kept Spurs up.
Now, Klinsmann for a fourth! Oh!
Some thought he was past it. I think he's proved a point. They're walking in the Klinsmann wonderland.
And then the last game against Southampton, you score your final goal, and of course you do the celebration as well, don't you?
But then knowing that it is going to be the final club game, you know, I thought I had to do it.
You absolutely had to do it. You absolutely had to do it. Management, though, was it always the plan to go into management? Because there's not many people that go straight into their first job and the national team, which is what you did at Germany and had success there, third in the World Cup. Was it something, management, that also suited you? Because I see you as a very friendly and a very nice man, and you know, and I love you to death, Jürgen, but I can't imagine you really dishing it out, or am I wrong?
No, I didn't expect to go into management. I went then, obviously, 98, the career was done. We moved to California because my wife, she's from California. And then I went back to school. I took computer lessons, classes, and business classes. I just try to figure out, so what is next in my life? So I took also to stay busy and to have your brain keep on going, because it's a big cut once you stop playing. And then it just happened in 2004 that my former manager, Bertie Vogt, was on vacation in California with his son. And we had a nice dinner, and Germany just lost a very early stage in Portugal and the Euros. Mm. And the whole discussion in Germany was about who's becoming the new manager of Germany. And he says to me during barbecue, basically, he says, that would be a good job for you. And I said, no, I mean, I live here in California. Life is good in California. Yeah, no. Yeah. But he was serious about it. He called the president of the federation the next day, and 2 days later we had a meeting in New York and talked about that possibility, and I took it on. So another overnight decision, basically.
Incredible.
Not as fast as on the boat from Alan Sugar, but
nearly
as fast. And the next kind of learning piece in my life came up.
And then Bayern Munich, who would have thought that, especially the time you'd had there before? So did you feel when you went to Bayern Munich that, you know, I want to now do this my way. Now I'm the boss and I want to do things in a different fashion. But I guess you're going against the same hierarchy that had the same thoughts, right?
Yeah, kind of one part of the club wanted me to come in as the game changer, kind of really kind of the agent, the change agent in a certain way. And then I had to realize there's the other side of the club, they don't want change. So I came in with all my enthusiasm and my ideas, and I realized again after a couple of months, I realized, oh no, it's not going to work out.
We are
clashing all the time, and we have different opinions all over the place. So I mean, it was pretty clear there after a year that, you know, we part ways again, and we wish each other good luck. And I'm still, I mean, obviously, following the team, following the club, and the city is absolutely gorgeous. It's the beauty of football really is it's all down to people. It's people management. It's if you fit or if you don't fit. It's the DNA of every environment. So every club has a different DNA. Every country has a different DNA. And then you have to realize as an individual, do I fit into that DNA? Oh, I don't.
And finally, one more for you, and that's the Spurs job. If you talk about the DNA and it fits, would that make you move? Was that something that had been on your mind, especially when managers change and you think, you know what, that would fit me just perfectly? Because there's a lot of people who would agree with you.
Well, the question is, would you fit the people that are there right now? You know, so when I came to Spurs as a player, as funny as Alan Sugar was, and even with the jersey, we matched. You know, we had fun. You know, because he's an entertainer. He's always good for a laugh and conversation. So, and all the people that were in charge at that time. Now, obviously, 30 years later, you know, you have different people in charge. Different people make different decisions, and they go their route. What remains is still the DNA of the club. And meaning the fans, what they, and also the identity with the players. But obviously things change, you know, they modernize the club. It's the most beautiful stadium you can find around the globe, you know, an amazing training center. But the people in charge need to match who you are. And that's why I think we never got together, because probably the people that are in charge right now at that club, they don't match basically with me.
Well, never say never. We're all still there.
Never
You're
say never.
Still there.
Yeah.
The DNA's still together. When you look back on your career, highlights for you, what's the thing that stands out the most for you?
The thing that stands out for me, Paul, is the relationships I was able to build throughout that career. Now, going through the different countries, learning their way of life, learning the languages, but also building a network. You know, I can go now to France, to Italy, obviously to England, and you know people, you share so many memories with them, you appreciate them, you appreciate the fan bases of every club you played for. I'm still in touch with every club I played for. Yep. In a very good, positive way. That's what really stands out. It's the relationships. It's not anymore looking at whatever you won or you lost or whatever. It's really kind of what you emotionally connect with these clubs. And it's people. It's really people.
Jürgen, it's been fantastic watching you play over these years. And it's an honour to know you as well. And it's so interesting hearing you talk for the last hour. I think we've all learnt a lot and we all think even more of you than we did before. So thank you so much for your time from California. And it's been great having you on My Sporting Life.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it.
This is My Sporting Life on Talk Sport.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.